This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Sunday, March 17th, 2024. I'm Jared Halpern. Sell or else. Congress takes a first step to block TikTok in the U.S.
Obviously, TikTok is very valuable, and I believe that there will be a number of people and entities that would be interested in purchasing TikTok.
The rematch is official. President Biden and former President Trump clinched the delegates they need for renomination.
You need to mobilize even more voters because your margins amongst that constituency are down. And that presents a real problem, I think, for the Biden campaign.
This is the Fox News Rundown from Washington. Politics can make for strange bedfellows. Take, for example, the vote this week in the U.S. House on a bill to force the sale of TikTok or the current Chinese owners facing a ban of the app in the U.S. Supporters include President Biden, Florida Republican Marco Rubio, former Speaker Nancy Pelosi, current House Speaker Mike Johnson, just to name a few. In total, the House passed that bill 352-65. Opponents included Georgia Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene and New York Democrat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Former President Trump, who in office attempted to block TikTok, also urged opposition to the bill, arguing it could expand the reach of Meta properties like Facebook. Now, the bill still needs to clear the Senate, and that is not a done deal. No vote is set, and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer was noncommittal in a statement following the House vote. In the meantime, prospective buyers are considering a sale. Former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin says he's putting together investors to potentially purchase TikTok. Washington Republican Kathy McMorris Rogers helped usher that TikTok bill through the House. She chairs the Energy and Commerce Committee that unanimously advanced the legislation earlier this month. I asked her about the urgency, the constitutional and free speech concerns, and what other social media regulations she'd like to see.
The choice would be TikTok's. So they could either choose to continue to operate as is, under the control of the Chinese Communist Party because they are owned by ByteDance, or they could choose to divest, separate from ByteDance and the Chinese Communist Party and continue to operate in the United States of America, and in businesses and individual users could continue using the app the way that they always have.
Would it have to be an American buyer, or could it be a French buyer, a Japanese buyer? Is there a specific, like, it has to be American?
No, not at all. This bill only applies to applications that are subject to the control of specific adversaries that are listed in the bill. And so we list these foreign adversaries as China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea.
I saw in sort of one of the headlines that the former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin has said that he's trying to put together maybe a group of investors. That would be fine by you?
Yes. So what this legislation does, this bill is about banning foreign adversaries, as I just said. Mm-hmm. So it's about banning foreign adversaries like China, Iran, Russia, or North Korea from collecting massive amounts of data through these apps. So targeting, surveilling, manipulating American people through apps such as TikTok. And we have concerns about TikTok being owned by ByteDance that is controlled by the CCP. So if this bill were to pass, TikTok would have to make this choice. And yes, it could be open to Steven Mnuchin or other buyers States of America. They could decide to take the company public. There would be a whole host of options. And obviously, TikTok is very valuable. And I believe that there will be a number of people and entities that would be interested in purchasing TikTok.
Let me ask about those security concerns, because TikTok and ByteDance have said that they do not have this coordination with the CCP, that the government in China does not have the kind of access to this data that, that you guys fear. Do you have evidence that they're lying about that?
TikTok has repeatedly been caught in this lie that it doesn't answer to the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, through ByteDance. We know that TikTok has been used to spy on American journalists. And we know that TikTok has been used to surveil American user data. Even last week when we were voting on the bill in committee, that morning, the 177 million users in America on TikTok did not have access to the app that morning until they actually called their representative and voiced their opposition to this bill. So TikTok had blocked their access to the app. And that's just one example where they have the potential to manipulate people for their own gain. And even internal TikTok employee recordings have revealed, you know, we have quotes where they've said everything is seen in China. And we know that we cannot trust China to safeguard our data, uphold American values of freedom. We know that China surveils on its own citizens, and we cannot allow this tool of the Chinese Communist Party to be used to target, to surveil, to manipulate American people through an app like TikTok.
I'm curious about the content side, too, because I know that there have been concerns expressed by some that, you know, TikTok is a platform that can spread misinformation, disinformation, especially worrisome, I know, in election years. Is that a part of the calculus? You seem to be talking more sort of concerned about what China has access to, maybe not so much the output. Am I reading that kind of right?
Yeah, this bill is targeting the threat that TikTok poses because the national security threat that TikTok poses because it is owned by ByteDance, it is beholden to the Chinese Communist Party, and the access of 177 million American users on this app. It does not regulate content or get into content at all.
How much of this should Congress play a role in? I mean, there's kind of an expectation, I would think, among most tech, you know, most people online now, that you're kind of giving up a level of privacy, giving up a level of data, right, when you join these apps. Like, I'm a parent. I don't have my kid on TikTok because I share some of the concerns you've talked about. How come individuals in America, parents, aren't capable of making this decision on their own?
Well, unfortunately, we do not have a national data privacy security law in place, a standard in place. I have been working on that separately, but companies are collecting enormous amounts of data. Just every imaginable data point, they're collecting it from people's location, this, who they're connecting to, other forms of sensitive information. I believe that we need a national data privacy security law in place to protect Americans online, and especially our children online that are being targeted today. And that's a separate legislation that we're working on in Congress. This bill is really unique and targeted towards the threat that having a company like TikTok that is controlled by the Chinese Communist Party having access to all of this information and all this personal data of Americans, because the algorithms are hidden to us. We know that they are manipulating this data, and it is especially concerning. We have grave concerns about TikTok being owned by a foreign adversary that is controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, having this access, and what that means to our national security. We've been briefed by our national intelligence agencies. Those are on the front lines, and they have impressed upon us that this is a very real threat.
The other question that I had, and I'm sure you saw, I think it was a day or two before the vote, former President Trump came out. He opposed this bill. He said that he worries that it's going to enhance the reach of Meta, of Facebook, of Instagram. He's very critical, obviously, of the ownership of Mark Zuckerberg. Have you spoken to him? Were you surprised by that response? And what is your answer to that type of criticism that, you know, this is only going to create a bigger problem, you know, with another social media company?
President Trump did not say that he opposes what we're doing. Rather, he did express the concerns with big tech at large. Mm-hmm. And I completely share those concerns. And that's where I'm committed to continuing to work to rein in big tech. What this bill does is really finish some work that former President Trump started 4 years ago when he was as president working and seeking to force TikTok to divest, to separate from the Chinese Communist Party via its ownership by ByteDance. And that is what we are attempting to make sure happens with this very narrow, specific bill.
When you look kind of broadly at social media, I know you're a mother. I don't know if your kids are old enough to be on all of the social media. My son's about to turn 11, so we're kind of entering that world, and I'm learning a lot more about it, frankly, than I think I knew a couple of months ago. But listen, there are concerns, right, about the impact it has on mental health, the impact that it has on self-worth, certainly the spread of maybe dangerous information. Where should Congress kind of begin and end in trying to regulate this field, whether it's TikTok or a company that's US based like Meta or X?
Well, let me start with TikTok and the bill that passed the House and just make very clear that TikTok is different because it is owned by a foreign.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah. So from a data collection point, I see how they're different. But I guess I'm talking more about like the other concerns that we hear about social media, because I know all of these are issues that kind of fall within your jurisdiction in the ENC committee.
Yeah. So that bill is very targeted specific to foreign adversaries. Separately, we have been working on legislation that would bring in a national data privacy security law into place and would protect Americans online, our children online. It would prohibit the targeting of our children. And what that legislation does is it limits how much data can be collected to begin with. It gives individuals the right to know what their profile is. It would prohibit the targeting, the collection of, your location data, your search history, all of, right now there's just limited amounts of data that's being collected and then how that can be sold. So what the legislation does is put some protections into place for the individual so that if your data, first of all, you know what the profile is. And then if your data is being sold, if it's being transferred, if it's being transferred to other countries, that you would have to be notified that you would. And if an entity, if a business is collecting more, data beyond what they actually need for a specific purpose, then you would have to give permission for them to collect data beyond what they actually need for their business purpose or the relationship that you have with this entity.
I think that's an interesting component to this because, especially as it kind of relates to these adversarial countries that you point out in this bill, Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, like they can kind of get at this data through other means, right? I mean, there are like these data brokers and things like that. So that's got to be sort of part of sort of the broader issue you're talking about.
Yes. In fact, we did, the Energy and Commerce Committee also has passed out unanimously a bill that would prohibit data brokers from selling our personal data to these foreign adversaries. And that bill will be voted on this week. Or this next week in the House of Representatives.
On this issue, I'll finish with the Senate. Do you think they're going to take this up? I think that there was some, were you surprised at it kind of the non-committal response we've seen this far from the U.S. Senate on this bill? Are you in conversations with Chuck Schumer and others over on the other side of the Capitol building?
Yes, actually, immediately after the bill passed, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, Mark Warner, and Senator Marco Rubio issued a statement in support. There's other senators that are also voicing support for the bill and for us taking action. There have been some other bills that have been introduced in the Senate to address apps like TikTok, but we are in active negotiations, and I'm hopeful that the Senate will take action very soon on this bill.
I wanted to finish with this, if I may, only because I know you have announced that you're not running for re-election after quite a while in the House. And I'm just curious, there seems to be kind of a trend of that, right? A lot of your colleagues that have been sort of veteran lawmakers are deciding to retire, do something else. What's behind that? I mean, is it just kind of time to pass the torch, or is Congress not as much fun maybe as it used to be?
Well, it's a lot of fun when you're chairing a committee. I can tell you it's been Great fun and such an honor to chair the Energy and Commerce Committee, to be able to lead on important legislation like we've been discussing today, continuing to work on privacy legislation. Another priority of mine has been price transparency in healthcare, which we also are working on. For me, it's time to go home. I do have young kids. I have three young kids, 16, 13, and 10. And just feeling like, you know what, it's time to pass the torch to the next person. It's been an honor and privilege to serve. And I do believe in this institution deeply. It's an amazing institution, the House of Representatives and Congress, and such an honor to serve. And there's a lot of people. I think there's 10 that have already announced that they would like to have consideration to take my place in the House.
Well, I appreciate you taking this time and explaining this bill. Listen, there's a lot of attention on this and a lot of people have questions. So I appreciate you answering ours and always appreciate the time you've given us over the last several years as well, Congresswoman. Thank you very much.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
The election more Americans than not say they do not want is the election voters will have. This week, President Biden and former President Trump both secured the delegates needed to become their party's nominees in November. Officially, neither will be renominated until the conventions this summer. But for all intents and purposes, the general election is now on, with both campaigns laser-focused on the candidate they ran against 4 years ago.
A lot of you helped me in 2020. And we make sure he was a loser. He is a loser. And we're going to make sure that happens again, right?
They never talk about his competence. He's grossly incompetent. Don't you understand that? The question is whether or not he's going to get to the starting gate. I can only hope. You know, I challenged him to a debate.
If the campaign and the candidates sound familiar, there's a good chance the electoral map those of us in my profession spend a lot of time looking at will also be familiar. A handful of states out west and in the southeast, and especially the upper Midwest, will likely determine if President Biden or former President Trump get a second term. This week, a pair of Fox News polls focused on two of those states, Arizona and Pennsylvania. Former President Trump won both states in 2016. President Biden won both in 2020. In the case of Arizona, only by about 10,000 votes. As it stands now, the former president leads by slim margins in both Arizona and Pennsylvania, 4 points, 49-45 in a head-to-head rematch in Arizona, 2 points, 49-47 in a head-to-head rematch in Pennsylvania. Now, this is a good time to offer the caveat I give whenever we talk polling. Polls are not predictive, but they do provide data points and they help shape trends. Trends that in several swing states show the former president with advantages at the dawn of this general election. Darren Shaw helps put these polls together for us. He is co-director of the Fox News polling unit and a member of the Fox News Decision Desk.
Yeah, Arizona, as you mentioned, is... I mean, you make an argument along with Georgia, I guess, mm-hmm. would be the two kind of critical battleground states from the last election, razor-thin margins. Yes, we have the same candidates, and there are largely the same sets of issues, but there are a couple of interesting changes. The first is Hispanic voters have gone from roughly, 2-1 Democratic in terms of both their party identification and their vote preferences, right? So 65-35, ballpark it, right now, about 50-50. And it's a difficult population to survey correctly. We had in our poll, for instance, Spanish language interviewers and a Spanish instrument for respondents who preferred to answer in Spanish. We take all sorts of precautions, but it's still tricky. And part of it is that amongst Latinos, levels of engagement are lower. They're less kind of ensconced in the party system. They're nominally Democratic, but sort of the defining characteristic is the party system has never really spoken to them in the way it has for white and African American respondents, right? So that's a shift. Young people, a core part of Biden's coalition in 2020, are kind of iffy towards both candidates. Both with Hispanics and African Americans and younger voters, I should say. It's not so much that they're sprinting towards the Republicans. It's just that their kind of traditional alignment with the Democrats seems to be eroding a little bit, right?
So it's to kind of follow up on that, it's not a question of whether or not they vote for Trump over Biden. It's a question of whether or not they vote at all.
I think it's two things. There's a mobilization question, and then there's the margins, which is African Americans. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing in Pennsylvania, we saw earlier in our Georgia poll. And their North Carolina poll as well, which we did last month. What's happening is that Biden's margin is going from 90 to 10, so like an 80-point advantage, to something like 70-25 with, the remainder going to third-party candidates. It's not that Trump's going to win African-Americans. I don't even think it's that he's going to win Hispanics, although it's much closer there. But Biden's margins are way down. The mobilization problem then comes in because – you need to mobilize even more voters because your margins amongst that constituency are down. And that presents a real problem, I think, for the Biden campaign.
The other interesting component in Arizona, and I'm curious if it shows up in polling and kind of the effect that it has on a presidential race, is that Senate race. Kyrsten Sinema, who was a Democrat, turned independent, was going to run as an independent. It was going to be a three-way race. She is now not running as an independent. Carrie Lake, a pretty divisive figure in Arizona, is the Republican nominee. You have Gallego, the Democratic congressman, also kind of a divisive figure for a lot of Arizonans running. What role does that Senate race play in kind of turnout, in kind of driving people to the polls? Is there kind of a down ballot pull, or is this kind of an up ballot pull? How do you see that Senate race playing out in Arizona?
I think the presidential race blots everything out. It's like the total eclipse that we're next month. I had a colleague at Maryland, University of Maryland, Jim Gimple, who used the phrase "shouting in a crowded cafeteria," and I think that's what you get by September and October of the presidential election campaign. One interesting feature to this poll is we didn't run a Senate race ballot because from a pollster's perspective, it's a little difficult prior to the primary, even though we think we know who the candidates are going to be, but the other candidates get mad at us and accuses of creating a
we don't want that
problem. Yeah. Exactly. So but we did run a generic House vote in both Arizona and in Pennsylvania, and the idea was, let's explore this possibility that there is a Trump tax, right, which came about after 2022. In other words, the pro-MAGA candidates, the Trump candidates, underachieved compared to party expectations in certain states, right? Georgia is the most obvious example, right, with Kemp at the governor's level running much stronger than Herschel Walker in the Senate level. But what we're finding in Arizona and Pennsylvania is that there's a very, very modest discrepancy between the expected vote for Republicans and what Trump is pulling right now. And if that's the case for Trump, I'm interested to see whether the initial polls of Lake and Gallegos show something similar, right? Does Carrie Lake underachieve the way that she underachieved, I think, by most accounts in 2022 in her Senate race, right? Gubernatorial race, right? Because right now, it looks like the MAGA candidates, the ultimate MAGA candidates, Trump, is running about what you'd expect kind of a traditional Republican would get in Arizona, and that's +4 to +6.
Let's talk about Pennsylvania, again, a state that Trump won, Trump lost, Biden won. He has his roots in Scranton, he talks about. I think he has spent more time in the state of Pennsylvania than he has in any other state over the last 4 years. Still has, in this latest poll that you guys put together, Trump up 2, certainly well within the margins. What does that tell you about how contested Pennsylvania is going to be? And kind of the coalitions that each candidate's going to have to pull and hold together in the Commonwealth?
Well, first of all, just you stepped on the headline. Biden's from Scranton? Gee, I hadn't heard that.
So he likes to talk about it.
he may have mentioned that in passing. What's interesting here is it seems to be the case. This is a little true both of Wisconsin and to a lesser extent, Michigan. these upper Midwest states, part of Hillary's famous or infamous blue wall.
Yeah, that crumbled. Right? Yeah.
Right. They crumbled. Yeah. And the dynamic that we saw in 2016, we saw it repeated in 2020, was that is less well-educated, white, kind of blue-collar voters moving away from the Democrats and towards the Republican candidate. And that held in 2020. It was just that traditional Democratic constituencies turned out, especially in Pennsylvania, high enough rates to overcome that. Right? So you've got this really interesting fight where the African-American vote has held a little better for Biden in Pennsylvania than it has in other states. So Georgia, North Carolina, for instance. So that's helping Biden. His vote in the urban areas, especially Philadelphia, seems to be holding pretty well. We're showing his advantages amongst suburban women. So these are these collar counties around Philadelphia, like Bucks, Montgomery, et cetera. Biden's doing reasonably well there. And Pennsylvania is the one state where younger voters have not kind of really abandoned Biden and become more of a swing group, as they have in some of the other battleground state polls we run. On the other hand, if you look down, and we get a little suspicious about going to subgroups or regional analyses, you know, our poll is 1,200 registered voters, but we do have a sufficient number in the Pittsburgh area. So not just Metro Pittsburgh, but the Pittsburgh area, which does include Scranton. And Trump is running surprisingly well out there, better than he did in 2020. In fact, his overall advantage accrues largely to running well in eastern and in western Pennsylvania right now. Now, is that kind of a statistical outlier? Is it an artifact? Because I've heard there were some interesting articles this week about the Democratic machine in Scranton and about Democratic support in Pittsburgh. But in our poll, we're actually finding that Philadelphia, and especially suburban Philadelphia, remains a critical battleground, and that Trump is actually doing less well in the T, right, the upper and central regions of the country, relative to what he did in 2020 and 2016, than he is in western Pennsylvania. So that's something to keep your eye on.
Yeah, we've seen, I think the campaign almost, the travel kind of tells that story too. You look at, you know, Biden has done, I think, two or three events already in sort of that mainline area of Philadelphia, right? Those kind of outer suburbs. He was in Bluebell. He's been in a few of those other areas. The other thing that I was fascinated by in the poll that you did, and I'm glad you did this, is you did obviously these head-to-head matchups, which are important, but also looked at how these results turn out if it's not just a head-to-head, especially in a place like Pennsylvania. You include Robert F. Kennedy Jr. In these polls, Jill Stein, Cornel West. You have in Pennsylvania, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. getting 9% of the vote. That's, I mean, it's not quite Ross Perot territory, but that's pretty outstanding for an independent candidate, no?
Yeah, this is, I think the Perot, harking back, I cut my teeth in the 92 campaign, paying attention in 96 quite a bit. And, you know, Perot was it in June of 92 was at 40%. He was actually leading.
Wow.
So I think people forget, you know, that he dropped out, then he came back. But
yeah,
Kennedy isn't that high. But, you know, from pollster's perspective, we wanted both on here. We're not sure whether Kennedy, Stein, West are going to qualify in all these battleground states.
That's right, the question, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But they're on track to. And as you point out, the interesting thing in Pennsylvania, I think people assume that the Kennedy name will disproportionately draw Democrats, his candidacy. I think it's a mixed bag.
You listen to his policies, the way that he kind of is appealing to a lot of base Trump voters, no?
Yes, that's exactly. I think that's exactly right. He's got this populist, anti-big pharma,
you know,
kind of anti-establishment appeal that really resonates with blue collar. It's funny. You think back to the original Bobby Kennedy and who he appealed to. And a lot of these lower status whites, as well as racial and ethnic minorities, right? And the same sort of things that Kennedy talked about in a slightly different context is what RFK Jr. is talking about. And so in Pennsylvania, it's a modest effect, but it goes from a plus two Trump in just a head-to-head to even.
Yeah, with Kennedy. 42-42.
Yeah, and I think that is almost entirely driven by the fact that he's peeling away some of these blue-collar white voters who kind of had it. They think the system is rigged. And Kennedy speaks to them kind of the same way Trump does. It will work differently in different parts of the country, I think. But in Pennsylvania, it would not shock me if Kennedy ends up marginally hurting Trump, but marginally is enough to swing a race right now.
Well, especially, and so I guess you kind of answered the question. I was going to say, if you're the Trump campaign or the Biden campaign, who's more worried about kind of, you know, Kennedy getting on? He is not, he needs to get on the ballots, and that is not an easy task to do. But assuming that he does, who is more worried about that?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, I got to say, RFK is, you know, if you follow his campaign, that, you know, for instance, I listened to a 4-hour podcast with RFK and Joe Rogan. And I came away from, it was a trip from Austin to Dallas, see my wife's father. It was an interesting trip.
I've made that drive many times.
pretty interesting. And I came away from that thinking that, first of all, these long form interviews are really good for RFK. You know, he does well when he has a chance to kind of really get ramped up. I don't think either of these major party candidates wants him anywhere near a debate. It's not clear to me they want to debate each other, and they certainly don't want Kennedy in the mix. I think his natural appeal right now, given the coalitional shifts in the parties over the last 8 years, I think his natural appeal may ironically be a little more Trumpy than it is Democratic. On the other hand, I think that's a really marginal tendency. And the other two candidates in the race, West and Stein,
that's bad news for Biden, right?
They're unequivocally.
I mean, because you saw what happened with these sort of uncommitted voters in the Democratic primary. And listen, I don't know if that translates to a general election, but it shows that there is a level of discontent, especially among progressives. And if there are other choices, they may pull the lever for those choices.
Exactly. And we've talked about younger voters, voters under 30 years of age, who do not have the same kind of history and attachment with the major parties. And if they're animated by issues, you know, like abortion, like
the war in
Gaza, Hamas conflict, Gaza, then why wouldn't Stein or West be appealing to them, right? It'll be interesting. I remember in 2000 when the Gore campaign spent one of the last weeks of the campaign, they went hard after Ralph Nader.
I remember,
up watching the Sunday morning shows, and Gore went in, and I remember thinking, boy, they're giving Nader a lot of attention. Is this really a good move? It turned out it was a very smart move. I mean, they basically collapsed Nader's support. I think he went from 5 or 6% to about 2%. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see a similar move kind of deep into September or October, which is if these three candidates, especially RFK, continue to draw, I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see a concerted effort to delegitimize those candidacies by the major party candidates. That's a high-risk strategy, right? Giving them oxygen, giving them attention, and especially when, you know, in Nader's case, the appeal was almost exclusively to Democrats. But in the case of Kennedy in particular, I think, I'm not sure if I go after him, if I'm Biden or Trump, and I go after him and kind of make him a vehicle for the other side, I mean, you might counter-mobilize, right? So, so it's a very tricky calculus,
I mean, I'll just finish with this. It is the middle of March, and we are in a general election mode. What is the level of fatigue that you think voters could have come November?
I think it could be pretty high. This is the irony, which is that everybody talks about, and correctly, if you read the polling information, that nobody really wants these two candidates.
That's correct.
We strongly prefer to have a new crop. On the other hand, one of the things we know from political science is that fear and anxiety and anger tend to be more powerful motivators with respect to turnout than hope and optimism. Not always, but, and, you know, one question is, yes, we're going to be tired of this. We, you know, are we really going to learn anything new about Trump or Biden over this endless campaign that's on the horizon? On the other hand, I would expect a very high turnout election because, you know, each side sees the other side as presenting an unacceptable alternative. And in fact, I mean, that's, you know, on the Democratic side, here's kind of a counterintuitive notion. I think Democratic turnout and mobilization is largely baked into the cake. I think there's such a anger and fear of Trump.
Yeah. The anti-Trump movement is so strong amongst Democratic voters. Yeah.
Right. And then the question then becomes on the right is Trump's appeal to his base, you know, after 8 years after he emerges on the scene politically, and is anger and antipathy towards Biden sufficient to mobilize Republicans at the same kind of level? Now, I'm saying it's counterintuitive because right now Republicans are expressing greater enthusiasm, but they're the out party, and the out party almost always expresses greater enthusiasm. I'll be interested to watch this wax and wane over the next 500 months as we slide towards election.
Well, I am excited that it presents an opportunity for you and I to have many more of these chats between now and then. And we'll have probably a few off air as well. But Darren, I always appreciate your insight. You guys at the polling unit are going to have just a tremendous amount of work between now and November. And certainly we appreciate all of your efforts on our election nights as well. So, Darren, enjoy whatever break you get between now and then, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you very much. Take care.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
That will do it for this edition of the Fox News Rundown from Washington podcast. Tomorrow on the Fox News Rundown, is the impeachment case against President Biden collapsing? House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer will answer that. And Brian Kilmeade takes a deep dive on NIL, the name, image, and likeness rules allowing college athletes to make big bucks. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm Jared Halpern from Washington.
Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.